All right, grab your programs if you would and take a look in there. Grab your notes. I'm Robin Gaddis. I'm the lead pastor here. And that's a little awkward when you get out with your wife and you find out, oh, our marriage is showing, other people can see it. We're starting a series here called Mr. and Mrs. Better Half. And basically, we're not trying to put anybody on a guilt trip. So if you came in here today and you're like, wow, my relationship is struggling, I'm really not doing that well, at East Lake, we don't motivate with guilt. Because I know a lot of us are in relationships that go up and down, up and down, up and down, and they're not easy. And we get into things that are difficult, and the last thing we need is to feel guilty in the relationship that we're in. Some of us have even been through divorces. So it's not about guilt, it's about going forward. There's level ground here, and so everybody gets an opportunity to go forward. Now we're in the third week. On the first week, we talked about expectations. And so the whole idea was, we said that if you can get this part right, everything falls into place. And that we all go into marriage with expectations. We go into marriage knowing what we want. So we get into a marriage and we know what we want our spouse to look like. And we know how many kids we want to have. We know what kind of car we want to drive, what kind of house we want to have. And we really know what kind of income and vacations. I mean, the reason I get married is because I know what I want. Now the problem is now there's somebody else in the relationship and they know, guess what they want. And that's when the expectations can begin. The difference between a desire and an expectation, I mean, it's fine to have desires because that's something that you can share. So two people, like one person desires something and then you kind of agree, okay, we're going to work together to get that. But an expectation is very different. An expectation is when I expect you to give me what I want. I hold you completely responsible to make sure I have what I want. So the very first week was, how do you spot those expectations and then turn them back into desires? Everything falls into place. You can catch it online if you want to see it. You can go to our online campus. I'm really glad that you're here. Thank you. If you're watching online, that's cool. Come in and check out a live service sometime. It's your church too. Now, last week we talked about the difference between men and women and that they're wired very differently. I mean, if a woman says, I don't have anything to wear, what she means is I don't have anything new to wear. But if a man says I don't have anything to wear, he means I don't have anything clean to wear. Because we're wired way differently. I showed this example last week. That men are sort of like in their brain they have boxes. So I brought this along last week. They like have their wife box. And they go in here and they store all their wife stuff in here and that's everything, you know, that's their wife box. And then they have like their work box. It doesn't touch their wife box because their work box has everything to do with work and you know, that's where they put all their work stuff. And then they have their family box here, like all their family stuff is in here. And then they have their money box. And the reason that happens is because when little tiny baby boys are in the womb at like 20 weeks, testosterone hits their brain and it like compartmentalizes it. And they have all these little tiny cubbies. So when men grow up, it's very easy for them to have boxes. And they put everything in there. Now remember last week I talked about, of course men have this box too, they like that box, but maybe the favorite box of a man is their nothing box. And that's the box that we absolutely, I mean when we're in that box, we just wallow in that box. That's the box you see when we're on the Xbox. Or ESPN, and we're just like zoned out, you know, and like the women are trying to talk to us. You know, when you ask a man, he's in nothing box, you say, you know, what are you thinking about? And he's like, nothing. He means nothing. There's nothing going on in there, and they love that box. Now, I brought something else to show sort of what a woman's brain looks like. It's completely different than a box. They're 20 weeks in the womb, and they get hit by estrogen. It's like Miracle-Gro. I mean, it hits their brain, and everything gets connected, and everything's associated, and like what the kid said to him in the morning, and their husband didn't give him a kiss goodbye, and then they got to go to the school, and there's a mean principal there, and then, oh my gosh, she has more pretty boots than I do. I'm having a bad hair day. And it's like all happening at the same time. It's all wired together, because like their brain has no boxes. So they can't understand men. They're like, well, wait, I don't understand. I mean, why? And here's what we talked about. Oftentimes what women do to try to get us out of our nothing box or into communication is they get so frustrated with us as they start to nag and it doesn't work because here's what men want. They want to be respected. And when they get nagged at, it reinforces that I'm not worthy of your respect. So they just go deeper, deeper into their little cavern in their box. So here was the idea in week two is that ask them to shift. men can shift. They're over here, you know, and they need to get into their wife box and their nothing box or their money box or their work box or their golf box or I'm going to buy a new gun box or a new boat or whatever. It's like their box. And then, like, they can shift to their wife box. But you have to ask them. You have to say, listen, some stuff happened today with the kids at school, and I need you to get into your family box with me. How much time do you need? Nagging won't work. Now, guys, you know, here's one thing for us. When women, because they're so connected and what they desire most, what a woman wants is connection. So you can't just sort of problem solve from the sidelines with a woman. Women do not like it when guys get them together and draw up the play and then slap them on the butt and say, get out there and win that game. They don't like that. Guys love it. They're like, whoo-hoo, coach thinks I rock. That feels like respect to me. Women feel alone. Women do not want to hear, you can do it. Women want to hear, we can do it. Because their whole, I mean, here it is. This is all touching in there. And men sometimes look at this and go, oh my God, how am I going to untangle that? That's not the point. It's being with them. Now today we're going to look at communication. We're going to look at how it is that we communicate, and check this out. I want you to hear something. See what you think of this. His communication right here.
Yeah, my wife got attacked by a warthog real bad. I need someone to come up with an ambulance and pick her up. Okay, sir. Can you do your address? Yeah, we're at 1825 Eucalyptus Drive. Okay, can you spell that for me, sir? I'm going to drag her on over to Oak Street. You can pick her up.
It starts out really good. A lot of conversations that we have with each other just like that. They start out okay, and then they're not so good. I was talking to my son this last week. We're on the cell phone. We're talking this really great conversation. Then all of a sudden, the reception starts going in and out, in and out, in and out. And you know, you've been there before. You kind of catch a little bit what they say, and then they're gone. And then you like sort of guess with your answer. You try to guess at what they said because you didn't hear everything they said. And here's the point. When you don't have a good connection, you can't communicate. Communication is the basis of, you have to have a connection to be able to communicate. And it's a big idea this weekend, right in your notes. Communication depends on a good connection. It's the connection that sets the stage for communication. You can have all kinds of skills and really, really important things to talk about, but if there's no connection, you're not going to communicate. And let's look at something in the Bible here to give it some credibility. This is a story about the very first man and wife, the very first couple, Adam and Eve. And here it is right here, Adam talking. At last, the man exclaimed, this one is bone from my bone and flesh from my flesh. She'll be called woman because she was taken from man. This explains why a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife. And the two are united into one. So here's the story. You know, Adam, he starts out all by himself. You know, anybody to talk to, anybody to connect with. I mean, well, like he had animals to talk to, and there was plants, and so I guess if you're into that kind of thing, he could talk to his plants. But that was all. I mean, that was all he had. And then Eve shows up. So this woman shows up, and Adam's like, way. I mean, this is what it feels like to be connected. This is what it's like to talk to somebody that you're connected to. And he totally gets it. The problem is that when we become disconnected, it's almost like we feel all alone again. We start to have one-sided conversations. Because the whole key is connection. The whole key. And one of the things about being connected is, you feel a loss of connection. You're not communicating. But if you're like me, here's where I always go, my default with Clarice. Whenever like we're not having an okay conversation, I always think it's content. So I try to, in fact, let me ask this question. Who are you having the same conversation with over and over again, and it's not going anywhere? It doesn't seem like you're getting anywhere. And you're thinking it might be a content problem, or I'm not saying it correctly. I need to explain it differently, and maybe it's not. Maybe it's a connection problem. Because Clarice and I were talking, we're not getting anywhere, and I always think it's content. I always think my default is if I just explain it better, if I just change the content a little bit, you know. And so you know, because I sort of have, you know, my thing is I'm like talker, and so I'm going to talk my way into, you know, getting her to understand, and then she doesn't understand, which frustrates me, and so I start to get frustration, and then Clarice feels attacked, which is the absolute worst, because remember, women always want to know that a man has their back. I mean, A number one is like, that dude has my back. And so it's the worst thing a woman wants to feel, a wife. She never wants to feel like my man is attacking me. But I start to, you know, get frustrated, and she feels like, and now we got a ginormous fight going on. Because I always think it's about content. It never occurs to me that it's a connection thing. And I've observed something through the years in my own marriage that normally when we're not able to have a conversation, the real reason is there's a prior disconnect. Somehow we've been disconnected over something, and now we're not able to talk. And unless we get back connected, there's not going to be any communication. So if you're having the same conversation over and over again with somebody, it always feels like a one conversation, one-sided, and it's not going, or maybe the real problem is not content. Maybe the real problem is you're disconnected. And unless you do something about that, there's not going to be any communication. I don't know, like, have you ever had one of those times when you're talking to someone, you're talking to them, you're having this great conversation on your cell phone, you're talking, and all of a sudden you sort of realize, oh, I haven't heard their voice in a while. Then you realize, oh, man, the call got dropped. And you know that feeling, like, you know? That's what it can be like to talk to someone. It's like you're talking to them, and then they respond to you, and you think, did you hear the words that were coming out of my mouth? I mean, that's not even close what I'm trying to say. But maybe it's not content. Maybe what it is a disconnect. And if you're not connected, especially when you're trying to communicate you love someone, you're really trying to get that across to them, it's just not making it. This author wrote a book, Gary Chapman, The Five Love Languages. And in the book, he says there's five different ways that we prefer to be loved. Everybody has a different way, a different language that they prefer. We all have this, that we want to be loved. And so when someone speaks that language to us, we feel loved. But if they don't, then we don't. And he talks about if you speak the right language to someone, the right love language, then you fill their love tank. Which is kind of a cool 70s disco song type thing. And so, you know, they got their love tank filled. But if you don't speak the right language, if I bust out in Russian right now and I just start talking to you in Russian, and in the middle of my conversation I say, I love you in Russian, you're not going to know. And you're not going to get it. And I'm not going to accomplish getting across to you that I love you, and you're not going to feel loved. And the problem is that's the deepest form of connection. When your love tank is, when your tank is filled, you can feel connected, and then you can communicate. So let's take a look at these five different love languages, and you can kind of check in. You can ask yourself, like, do you know your love language? Do you know your spouse's or your boyfriend's love language? Take a look in your notes. Number one, affirming words. And here's what the scripture said. Words kill, words give life. They're either poison or fruit. You choose. And for some people, verbal praise makes them feel so loved. And that is their love language. And the problem is that harsh words for those same people are so devastating. I mean, how they're talked to. You remember the old little nursery rhyme, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. That was definitely not written by somebody that feels loved or not loved on the basis of how they're talked to. Because words do hurt them a lot. And how they're spoken to sometimes is even more important than actions. Just how they're talked to. That's their love language. That's how their tank gets filled. So you can just sort of check in and, you know, see if that's how you are. In our relationship, I notice sometimes when I say the wrong words, words are not my thing. Like, it doesn't make me feel more loved if someone talks to me a certain way, so that's definitely not my love language. And if it's not your love language, you can sometimes not know the impact of your words. And so you say something, and you can see the look on their face, you know, and it's like they're totally hurt, you know, and maybe they say something to you, and you realize, oh man, you know, and so you start to say, I didn't mean it, and how come you took it that way, and how come you have to be so sensitive, and you know, I take it back, you know. The problem is, once the horse is crapped, it's hard to get the crap back in. But we try, don't we? We're like, I am so sorry. I didn't mean to say that. And you just heard it wrong. And you got to watch it at that moment. Because anytime you hurt someone, especially someone with a love language of words, anytime you say some words that hurt them, the more you talk, the more you hurt them. So one of the best things to do right off the bat is shut up. Just absolutely shut your mouth. And just slow it down a little bit. And instead of trying to defend yourself, explain things. Because if you explain things, normally it makes them feel like, oh, it's my fault. I mean, if you just hadn't taken it that way, you might as well just get a match and light a bomb. Here's the best thing you can do. If you're with somebody and their love language is words and you blow it, don't even try to get the crap back in the horse. Don't even try. The best thing you can do is just admit it. Just say, you know what, I said something wrong. And I'm sorry. Just really simple, just I said something, I said something I wish I hadn't said. I was wrong to say that. Just humble yourself. And if you're with someone or you're married to someone and you know you have that dynamic, you have to give them permission to say that. You have to work this out on the side and go, listen, you know, your words can really hurt me, and so when you blow it, I need you to stop and shut up. So when I tell you to shut up, it's not just because I'm mad. I mean, shut up. And then the next thing I need to hear you say, if you're hoping to get into the same bed sometime in the next 6 months, is, I shouldn't have said that. It was wrong. Now, by the way, I'm not trying to tell you in this talk to stop saying anything, because life isn't about stopping something bad. It's about starting something better. If you're critical of your husband, you use really critical words all the time, and that's his love language. If you stop being critical of your husband, that's good. Better, start speaking encouraging words to your husband. You know, when you stop something, all you do is you eliminate what's been happening that's not okay, but you haven't caused life yet. You may have stopped the poison, but you haven't created any fruit. So here's what it's about. It's about replacing it with something better. So if you're in a relationship and the love language is words, here's what I want you to do this week. Here's an idea this week. Just sit down and say to yourself, what am I going to start saying? How am I going to start speaking to them? Because when your love language is words and someone says, I really appreciate what a hard worker you are, you look extra nice today. I mean, you're pretty every day, but today you're like, whoa. You're a great mom. You are so patient with the kids. Those boots rock. You're smart. I mean, those are life. They fill their tank. And listen now, and when their tank is full, they'll be connected to you. And when you're connected, you can talk about anything. Don't think you're going to move the ball by getting all kinds of skills and Googling it and going online. Ooh, I got 9 skills on how to talk. Uh-uh. Communication happens because I'm connected. Now, number two, look at your notes, receiving gifts. Whoop, no, quality time. I almost forgot this one, which will get me in trouble later because this is my wife's love language. So once again, quality time. Then right here, let me read this to you. Then, because so many people were coming and going, this is Jesus talking, that they did not even have time, a chance to eat, he said to them, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. This is my wife's love language, one of her love languages. I mean, this is Clarissa's love language. She really likes it when she gets my undivided attention. I mean, that's what fills her tank. Now, here's the problem. I can be in the same room with Clarice physically and not be there emotionally. And that does not fill her tank. In fact, one of the things that happens is, you know, Clarice and I were spending quality time together, which when I first got married seemed like such a word phrase. And it was like, let me spend quality time. I said, we're defining time now? I got to watch for that, you know. But you know, she's having a conversation with me. And as we're having the talk, what I've noticed is I'm always trying to move the conversation to done. If you're a doer, you're moving that conversation. Like, come on, keep talking. I'm way ahead of you. Come on, I already got the answer. You know, and you're moving it to done. And the problem is, it's not about getting done. Hey, if your love language is quality time, you don't want it to end. The last thing you want is somebody trying to speed it up. Because it's not about being done. It's about connecting. This one couple, this girl's on the phone, and she's talking to her friend, she's talking to her girlfriend, they're talking, Susan, and she gets off the phone, and her husband says, hey, who are you talking to? She's not talking to Susan. And her and her husband are sitting at the kitchen table talking. They're drinking a cup of coffee, and they're talking. And she says, how come we never do that? He's like, well, make a pot of coffee. You know, so she makes a pot of coffee, and you know, they get down, they get the coffee, and they sit down at the table. They're side by side there, and they grab the coffee, and they just like staring at each other. And finally, the dude says, you know, you better call Susan and ask them what they're talking about, because we're not getting it. Quality time. In this particular story, Jesus has these friends, these disciples, and they've been very, very busy, and they got all kinds of stuff going on. And he knows that from time to time, he has to sort of pull everybody to the side and spend some quality time with them. Because you feel loved differently when you're not doing anything together. And for some people, that's huge. Now, I'm not that way. I usually get closest to people when we're like in the foxhole together, when we're working, when we're doing stuff. That's how I get close to people. But Clarice isn't like that. Work is work, but quality time is what makes her feel loved. And so we have to be able to pull ourselves aside, which can be totally difficult when you have kids. And we had to lock ourselves in the bathroom, and just like, because that's the only place there was privacy. When you have kids running around all over the place, it is really hard to get quality time. And here's just one thing I want to say. You may be close to your kids and spend a lot of time with your kids, but the quality time that you have with your kids will never fill your tank with your spouse. You're going to have to find a way to get quality time. I got a couple ideas, like quality conversations. So you have a time where you're going to have a quality conversation with someone. And when you have a quality conversation, you're definitely not there to fix anything. You're there to listen. Because, now catch this, when a person's love language is quality time, the reason they need you to listen during the conversation is because the more you listen, the more they feel known. See, that's what it's all about. It's not about fixing anything. That person wants to tell you about their day, every painstaking detail. I mean, from the very, very beginning all the way to the top, they tell you all the stuff, all the details, everything that's going on. You know, because when you hear about their life, they feel known. And when they feel known by you, they feel loved. They don't want to know about your life right then. It's all about moi, and I want you to know about me, because if you know everything about my day, then I'll feel known. So you have to listen. And the next thing is quality activities. So here's Clarice, quality time. She likes to, her thing is decorating houses and being in houses and decorating and moving all around. And she watched like gobs of the decorating shows, and she likes all that kind of stuff. And I didn't like any of it, really. She's like, you know, but I found out one of the ways that we could connect is to connect over the kind of furniture you're going to have and the paint we're going to have on the walls and everything we're going to do. So at some point I realized, I was like, whoa, she really likes to talk about how the house is going to be decorated, and I really don't. And so we had to kind of make the decision, how are we going to do this? So we decided we weren't going to buy anything, we weren't going to get any kind of furniture, we weren't going to ever purchase anything unless we both agreed on it together. Now, why did I do that? Because I knew it would force me to get involved, because I didn't want to come home with something that I hated. And so I was like, okay, so we picked out the color of the walls, we picked out the furniture, we picked out everything, and the problem for me is, it means going shopping. And I don't know what it is about going shopping. Like, my wife could go into, she likes sort of offbeat furniture stores and, you know, stuff where you go in and you look at everything and you go over and you look at the lamp and does the lamp match the couch, and then you go back and forth 65 times, and then you finally go over and look at the throw rug, which is too expensive to buy, but oh my God, I wish I had it. And you just do this forever. And the problem with this is that her endurance level to do that is, it's unbelievable. It's a marathoner. Do you know that I can play basketball with my two sons for 5 hours and my feet never hurt? I walk into a store, they're aching in 5 minutes. My feet are throbbing. I mean, I'm walking into that storm back and forth to the couch and the lamp and the lights and this and that and the other thing. And like some person that talks way too slow trying to tell us that we can't afford it anyways. And my feet are just but here's what I know. Here's what I know. That activity, man, that fills her tank. It's huge for her because it's quality time. So if you have someone and it's quality time, don't just set aside the time and think that you've hit the mark, because chances are you have not. You have to be sharing. Okay? Number three, receiving gifts. Here's something in the Bible. A woman came with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume made of pure nard. She broke the jar and poured the perfume on his head. This is Jesus now. Some of those present were saying indignantly to one another, "Why this waste of perfume? Leave her alone," said Jesus. "Why are you bothering her? She's done a beautiful thing to me. I tell you the truth, wherever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her." So here's someone that hits the mark with Jesus. Jesus is a person, he has a love language too, and she hits the mark by giving him a gift. I mean, she walks up and I guess she has this really expensive perfume that's probably doesn't sound that great to us because it's nard, but I guess in that day, nard was awesome. So she shows up with this nard, you know, and she puts the nard on Jesus' head and he really likes it. And it means a lot to him to receive a gift, and here's why. When your love language is receiving gifts, you know what you really receive? A part of their heart. Anytime someone gives you a gift, it's like they're giving you a piece of their heart. She shows up to give Jesus a portion of her heart. And think about the gift. I mean, you normally don't think about giving a man perfume. You know why? Because it's never really the gift. If a person's love language is a gift, it's never really the gift. It's the fact that your heart comes along with it. I mean, she shows up and gives him perfume. And it still matters to him. Because it's never the type of gift. It's the heart. And people get on his case about it. They start putting him down. Wow, come on, what's with you? You like a gift, and how come you have to do this? And Jesus gets up in it, and he defends her, and he says, "Get off her back. Leave her alone." And they tell him it's a waste. Have you ever given someone a gift before and it seems like they just wasted it? I want to give you a tip, because in our family, there's three of us that don't really care about gifts that much. Well, that's not really true. We like a gift if it's exactly what we want. Then we like the gift. But if it's not exactly what we want, I remember when very first Christmas, Clarice and I are married. She got the packages for me, and listen to this. I open up the package, and it's a sweater, and I pull out the sweater, and I instantly knew I hated it. I was like, I would never wear this sweater, and I pulled it out, and the first thing I said to her is, "Did you keep the receipts?" Not so good. Because gifts are not my love language. So if you're with some, like you may, and here's the thing, you may like to give gifts, and you're getting hurt all the time because they could care less about them unless you hit the exact bullseye, which is just about impossible because you don't read minds. So here's the best thing you can do. Here's the best thing you can do. This is okay too. Just get gift certificates. That's what I like. Give me a gift certificate so I can go buy what the hell I want. Exactly what I want. It's no shame on you. I love that gift because I have control of it. So don't beat yourself up. But here's what I am trying to say. If you're with someone that their love language is gifts, give them gifts all the time. I don't care what it is. Tie a little bow on a quarter and hand it to them. Oh, they thought of me all day. Because when your love language is gifts, did you see what Jesus said about the woman? He says something. He says, you know, wherever the gospel's preached, here's what he's saying. Wherever the story is told about me, make sure you tell them about the time that this woman hit the mark with her gift. Wherever it's told, I want to make sure. Do not forget this day. Do not forget this woman. It's a memory point. And when you give someone a gift and their love language is gifts, do you know what all those gifts are? They're points of memory. It helps them remember they love me. And they need it. Because let's face it, man. Relationships are a challenge and life is a challenge. And you need things that help you remember, oh, that's right. They love me. It's really an advantage if you're the person that has that love language, because one of the things that happens between men and women is women are really good at nuances. Because remember, here's how they are. So everything's connected, and they really get nuances. And so they can just sort of give these nuances when it comes to communicate. And dudes don't get those at all, because they don't even have a box called nuance. They have no idea what a nuance is. And if you're a woman here and you have been hurt in your relationship with a man, it doesn't mean they did anything wrong. It just didn't work out and you got hurt. It's difficult to put yourself out there again. So now you just don't operate nuances. You sort of fire hints out there on occasion, hoping they'll pick up on it. And if they pick up on it, then you feel like they love you. But if you don't, it just gives you a little bit of space to feel like, I'm not as rejected because I never really asked for it. And it doesn't work. I think I told you this once before when Clarice said one time to me, why does it always take a 2x4 with you? Do you know what a man calls a 2x4? Clarity. We don't mind it. But for women, and so if her love language is gifts, or his, give them all the time. It'll help them remember. Now, the fourth thing, two more to go, acts of service. You, my brothers, were called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge in a sinful nature. Rather, serve one another in love. Now, I understand this one because acts of service are my primary love language. Quality time? No. You know, say all kinds of things to me? No. You love me, the way you do it is you show me, you help me. You do something for me and I feel loved. And a lot of times this develops in your family of origin, how you were raised, the kind of family you were raised in. Most of my life, my mom was an alcoholic. And so she just could not be there for the family. And so I did all my own laundry. Starting out second, third grade, I did all my own laundry. I made all my own food. I did all my own homework alone. I played sports. I found all my own rides to practice. And I found all my own rides back home from practice. And it was always embarrassing to have to ask people for a ride because, like, well, you're so lame. And I had to buy all my own clothes. I mean, that was just my life, and it was my two sisters' life, and I had to try to take care of them, and I just felt like I was totally on my own. And as a little kid, I was just always wishing somebody would help me. It was so crazy when you go to your parents, you know, and they're never there for you, and then, like, you see your friend, and his mom's getting out of the car at school, coming into the school with, like, his project and everything, and you had nobody to help you with your project. And so that was my life. And so I was always hoping, you know, somebody, if I could just get some help. And you get hurt and you get disappointed. And at some point in my life, I don't even know when, I just decided, you know what, fine. I'll just do it myself. Great. I don't need anybody help. I don't want anybody's help. I sort of saw myself as Mr. Tupperware. It was just, you know, I could go, and I never break. I could just go, and never break. And then I got married. And I found out acting like Mr. Tupperware actually kept me from getting what I wanted most, which was help. Because, like, Clarice just looked at me like Mr. Tupperware, and she just thought, well, because remember my vow? Fine. I'm not going to get help from anybody else. And what I discovered was I was not Mr. Tupperware. I broke and needed help like everybody else. But I sent the message that I was. And it kept me from getting what I was the most desperate for in the relationship, which was help. Of course, I'd put the pressure on the family to help me. You know, I'd boss people around, tell them what to do, and I'd come into the house, and everybody freak out and get everything clean, and Clarice. And here's what happened. See, here's the problem. This scripture says, like, about freedom. When your love language is acts of service, and somebody does it because they don't want to get in trouble, it does not fill your tank. It just gets something done. And so we had this really weird dynamic going on in our marriage that Clarice would, like, rush around and do everything, and then she'd resent it. And all I ever felt like is, like, what did I do wrong? I just needed some help. And I would be so, like, confused, because I'd be like, can't anybody see that I need help? I can't even believe that they can't recognize that I need help. Well, I was sending the message all those years, Mr. Tupperware, I'm good. That had to change. And you're going to find things in your relationship because you're raised a certain way that's going to be freaky for you, and you're going to have to be able to communicate and connect and get beyond it. Here's what we did. I had to learn to ask, which I hated to do. That's the worst thing. I was just hoping somebody could figure it out. I mean, when you're raised in a family and, you know, you ask and you ask and you ask and you get the same answer every single time, or someone tells you, yes, we'll pick you up for practice, and 2 hours later, standing in the snow, nobody shows up. At some point, you're like, asking does not work. In fact, asking makes it worse. So you stop asking. Do you know how Jesus won my heart? When I was a teenager, I didn't go to church. I didn't know anything about him at all. I didn't even know he was God. I didn't know anything about him. I don't even know why I did this, but I started asking him for help. All by myself. Nobody even told me to. I go to bed at night and say, God, Jesus, please, please, you know, like everybody else, please, I'll be a good boy, I'll be a good boy, please, please, please. You know, I'll never do, you know. And I started asking him for help, and then I started noticing that he was helping me. And he won my heart. I'm standing here today, a Christ follower, because I asked Jesus, and he helped me. And he won my heart, because that's my love language. And he knew that. He was so wise that way. He drew me to him by helping me. And you know what? Especially because I knew I didn't deserve it. I saw my life. I was like, I can't even believe you're asking him for something. Yeah, right. He's going to help you. You suck. But I asked him anyways, and then he would help me. I'd like go, really? And I did that enough times where I was like, But it took me a long time to get there with my wife. Long time. Now here's what Clarice had to learn to do. She had to learn to offer even when it looked like I didn't need it. Chances are, if you're married, here's the extremes it goes to. When you come out of a family like that, you either go to the extreme over here where you're super, 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 super needy all the time. Needy, 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 needy. It's my friend who adopted this child from India, and they would find food stuffed in all of his drawers, hidden up in his pants and under his shirts. And they're like, Sundar, what? You know, because he came from a place that he never had enough food, and he was starving, he never had enough, and he was afraid it was going to happen again, and he didn't get that it was going to be different, so he would take food out of the kitchen, and he would stash it all up in his dresser, because he was just so sure. And some people go there, needy, 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 and then there's the extreme over here, I'm good, I'm Mr. Tupperware. So you'll have to learn to ask, and they'll have to learn to offer. Now, I'm not saying it's perfect in my marriage, because it's not, but it's a process. And I do get my love tank filled because someone's helping me. Now, here's the next one, physical touch. It's the last one. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I've set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. The night before Jesus goes to the cross, he throws a dinner. He's the host for all of his buddies, all of his friends, the disciples. And during that dinner, he washes their feet, which is kind of freaky because I don't like anybody touching my feet. I don't even people like seeing my feet. But Jesus gets up and he goes and he washes their feet. Now he knows that he's going to the cross the next day. He knows that. And he knows it's gonna blow their minds. It's gonna be very, very difficult because when they see him hanging on that cross, they're gonna think, how could any of this been true? They're gonna question everything. And one of the things they're gonna question is, how could you have loved me? Did you really love me? Then why would you, like, how would you let this happen? You're gonna be gone now. And so he uses this love language to reassure them. And when you know physical touch, and by the way, every man claims physical touch is their love language, of course. You know, because, I mean, they all think, oh, my love language is physical touch, and I need it in the morning, in the afternoon, and just before bed, and as soon as we wake up, and once in the night when I set my alarm. And that's just how dudes are. But I'm not talking about like that, just that, because that could just be hormones building up. It may not even be. You can always tell a dude that it's not physical touch, it's just sex, because it's just like they get this like huge buildup and they're going to explode. I got to have sex. Like, ah! And so, yeah, okay, jump my bones. Fine, we're done. But the truth is, men that are loved by physical touch, they have a much bigger problem than that. Because when they're touched physically, it tells them this: you care about me. When they get to touch a woman physically, or when a woman is physical touch, what it says is, you're not going to leave me. I matter to you. It might be the deepest of all loves. And in our culture, I think one of the things the enemy has done is robbed us of physical touch. It's hard to touch people physically now, and that's just the reality. There's been so much sexual abuse and so much rape and so much violent crime that we really don't even get to touch each other like my grandfather's generation, because it's not appropriate. People have boundaries, and that's it now. That's the world we live in. We made that world. But in marriage, we still get to touch each other. It's appropriate, and it's all of us. And when a man's love language is physical touch, and a woman withholds that, what she's saying to that man is, I don't want you. You're not worth it. And sometimes, and this may sting a little bit, but I'm just going to put it out there, sometimes women and sometimes men, they withhold sex or they withhold physical touch as punishment. We haven't spent any quality time with me at all. I mean, it's been months since we went to look at couches. No soup for you. They withhold it. And they think that that's going to work. And it doesn't. Because it injures the person that needs physical touch. Do you know the way that they feel connected and feel like they matter? The way they think that they're valuable in the relationship is that you let them touch you. I must be important to you because you allow me to touch you. I must be important to you because you touch me. It's a really deep thing. And when you cut that off, now I understand that many of us have been through things, and I'm in that boat where we've been through things sexually as children that's caused us to not be able to touch easily. And I understand that. I'm not talking to you, because if that's where you're at and you have to, you like, that's a difficult thing, then the best thing you can do is get some help. Email me, come and talk to me. I'll help you understand from my perspective, my journey. Because when I came into marriage, I thought, yay, we get to have sex, you know, it's gonna be great. And then what I found out is I didn't like physical touch. Because in my family, physical touch did not mean affection. I was thinking about it this week, and I could never, I had a glimpse, but I can't remember it. I don't ever remember my mom ever hugging me. But I remember her slapping me. And that's what physical touch is. And so I came into our marriage, and I was like, oh, yeah. You know, I'm glad sex takes like 90 seconds, because I don't really, you know. It was hard, it was difficult for me. And if that's where you're at, you can get some help. But if you're using it as a weapon, you need to stop that. You need to understand that that other person, that's their love language just as legitimate as it is for you to talk or receive a gift or have someone do something for you. Now here's the bottom line. We all want to communicate, I love you. When I was in high school, a freshman in high school, I took Spanish. I thought it was going to be so cool. I'm going to be Mr. Bilingual, and I'll speak Spanish and English, and I'll be really, really cool, you know, and I'll be able to, like, date white girls and Spanish girls, so I'm going to learn Spanish, you know. And so I got in there, and I'm going to learn Spanish, and then I got a little bit behind, and Spanish was really, really difficult, and I got behind, and I dropped out. And do you know, to this day, I cannot speak Spanish. You don't just learn a language easily. It takes time to learn the language. It's very difficult to learn the language of physical touch. All these languages take time to become fluent in them. But we all want to communicate, I love you. Look at how God communicated it. God loved the world this way. He gave His only Son so that whoever believes in Him will not die, but will have eternal life. So somewhere in those lines, just take a stab at it. What's your love language? What's your love language? Is your love language affirming words? Is it about words? Is it quality time? Is it receiving gifts? Just write it in there. Is it acts of service or is it physical touch? And here's the important one. Think about who you're dating or who you want to date or who you used to date, or think about who you're married to and ask yourself this question. What's their love language? Because here's what happens all the time. I try to love them in the way that I feel loved. And I have no idea why this happens, but usually opposites attract. And so, like, I've noticed this with Clarice. I can vacuum the floor and do the dishes, and I can like fold up all the clothes, and I can balance the checkbook, and I can do all this work, you know, that's just like, she's gonna love me, you know? And then I like leave a little card out for her that says I love you. I can't tell me how many, I stopped giving her cards because through the years I kept leaving cards out, and I'd watch her. She'd look and go, oh, that's really cool, you know, for like about 30 seconds, and I'd find that the dog had it in its mouth, it'd be in the garbage can. It's like, she could have cared less about it. But whoo, if I rub her feet, if I massage her back, if I give her a scalp massage, ooh la la. That's her love language. But it was difficult because it was not mine. Now here's the good news. Do you know why Jesus was selected? Do you know why God picked Jesus? Because he speaks everyone's love language. And he speaks yours. And he can help you speak theirs. So grab your connection card if you would and look on the back. We always try to get stuff going into Mondays and get traction. My next step, look what it says there. This week I will do, and what number are you going to do this week? And for some of you, the more you come here and like you realize, I don't even think I know Jesus yet, but I want to, then you can make a commitment to him. We'll say a prayer in a minute. And for other people, you're coming back to Jesus in some way, and that's fine too. I've told you before, for 3 months straight, when I first went to church, I got saved every Sunday. Every Sunday in that church, they'd say, close your eyes, and if you want to meet Jesus, raise your hand. And every Sunday, I'd go, I hope he saw my hand last weekend. I'm going to raise it again this weekend. Because I was all in. And some of you know you're not all in, but today you want to be all in. There's a team that prays for people, so you can look at that. And there's some places to volunteer on the side. There's a giving envelope in your program as well. In a moment, the ushers are going to come and get our connection cards. Please fill those out. Don't push back from that. We like don't send you tons of stuff, but it helps us connect. And then giving, here's an act of worship. Everything you see happens because of generosity, but it starts in a way to worship God. And I'm going to say a prayer. So if you'd close your eyes for just a minute. And as your eyes close, let me tell you, if you missed the last couple weeks or you want to review this one, you can jump online and see those. Next week, we're talking about, the topic is sex. The topic is sex, and the title is My Lame Sex Life. So invite your friends next week, and if they say, why in the world would I want to go to church? Tell them, whew, because we'll be talking about sex. And they can come and check it out. So Jesus, we make a prayer to you right now because you speak our love language. Everybody in this room has a preferred way that they feel loved, and you speak all of those languages. That's what's awesome. And I pray that you'd communicate to them right now in their heart how much you love them, and you give them the confidence to know that you're going to help them to teach the language of their spouse so their spouse can have a full tank and feel loved. We sing one more song. It's our way of loving you, Lord. But before we do, we say thank you for loving us. In your name, Jesus, amen.